It's the TED Radio Hour from NPR. I'm Manoush Zomorodi. And today, the history and politics behind three words. So we have talked about the they-them pronoun and its long history. But now let's talk about words that haven't existed until recently.
These days, there are attempts to forge new vocabulary. There are new ways of being polite in language that, if they're not ingrained in you, if you're past a certain age, can be difficult.
This is linguist John McWhorter.
I teach linguistics and music history at Columbia University.
He also writes a weekly column for the New York Times where he dissects our use of language and sparks heated debates in the comment section. He's become a bit of a controversial figure.
I switch hit, really, between linguistics and then in doing commentary on societal matters. And the truth is that the intersection between those two things is much thinner than many people think.
That crossover between linguistics and social change is embodied in a particular term, he says, Latinx. Do you remember the first time you saw the word Latinx?
Yes, I do. I had a student in one of my American studies seminars who was Latina, if I may, and she wrote me a paper about Latinx. I had not heard of it. I believe the year was, let's call it 2016. And I'm 58. I grew up with Hispanic as the term. And then seemingly very quickly around, I guess, 1990, in my experience, the idea was that we were to say Latino. But it's been hard not to notice that a great many Latino people still say Hispanic, or you hear older people saying Spanish. And then today we have this other development, and Latinx is based on an idea that you want to move people away from thinking about the gender binary. And in a language like Spanish, the O ending is masculine and the A ending is feminine. So the idea is that instead of saying Latino or Latina, you just say Latinx with the X covering both masculine and feminine. And the idea is to get beyond the gender binary, which is a concern of increasing centrality in our culture.
But as you have pointed out, the Pew Research Center has done a number of surveys on this term among Spanish speakers. I think the last one was in 2021. And they have found that even though about a quarter of these people had heard the term Latinx, only about 3% prefer to use it.
Yeah. Latinx is an interesting idea. But the simple fact is that the vast majority of Spanish speakers are not on board that we should think of sex differences as not really existing and being completely culturally constructed. And then also, I would say, the X is unideal because it doesn't sound Spanish, and X is considered a rather odd letter. That's not how Spanish usually works. You know, Spanish likes to have vowels at the ends of things often. Some people would prefer Latine because that sounds more like Spanish than the X and looks a little less icky on the page. So yeah, it's not going to catch on beyond a certain crowd.
And when you say a certain crowd, could you be a little more specific?
Okay, yeah, I know what you mean. It has become part of the progressive agenda to suppose that suggesting and even trying to impose new terminology is part of making people think differently and therefore changing the world.
Yeah, but some of those people that like your student might say, well, this is how we change. We start to use language that strikes people to their ear as different. They start to want to understand why. We start to question it. We open up conversations. And this is how progressives want to progress our society.
That student would certainly have said that. And unfortunately, it would be nice if that's the way language changed, but it usually doesn't.
And that is John's thesis. Society has to be ready, primed for new language, not the other way around. This idea is at the heart of a talk he's been giving to college students called Word Wars, Wokeism and the Battle Over Language.
Language changes, but these days one must be very careful an awful lot of the time. And we often have a sense that the terms change faster
than we can keep up with.
Here's John McWhorter speaking recently to students at Claremont McKenna College.
And I want to unwrap what a lot of that is about and what it isn't about. And I want to point to a direction for perhaps a more constructive future. And what it comes down to is basically that language changes. There are ways that language changes when society is changing. And that in itself can be a good thing. There's nothing wrong with new terminology emerging. And so, for example, there was a time when it was considered a novelty and by some people kind of annoying to have to say chairperson instead of chairman and chairwoman. I think we've gotten past that. You know, some terms make it, some don't. African American, those of you who are under a certain age cannot imagine how odd that sounded in 1989. It happened in like 2 days. You were black one day, Jesse Jackson got on TV, and all of a sudden somebody is calling you African American. And I'm thinking, I'm from Nigeria, but it became widespread very quickly. It's a little weird, but it's catchy. It had good intentions. It was pushed by the proper people, and it happened very quickly. Oriental to Asian was very similar. One day, you said Oriental as a very progressive person. Next day, everybody around you was saying Asian. I remember when it was. It was the spring of 1987. Asian. Boom. Well, it works. There was something pleasantly global about the term Asian. Oriental sounded kind of like it referred to food. It was time for something else. But there's something else happening these days that is, in my view, worrisome. And it's worrisome because it doesn't help people. It's proposed as a way of helping people, but it doesn't actually. And that is prescribing that language changes before thought and assumptions in society have moved in that particular direction. Many people are telling us that in order to change the way people think, you have to change the way people talk. And that can sound unexceptionable, that can sound perfectly rational, but the truth is that doesn't actually work. Many of these new terms are embraced wholeheartedly by a certain group of people. Roughly, you could say that it's one part academics, one part activists, and one part artists.
At the risk of opening up a whole can of worms, what are the roots of the thinking that if you change language, people will come along as well?
A lot of why people think that the words you use will change thought is because of an idea that gets around out there. It's the Sapir-Whorf hypothesis that people's languages and the way their words cover the world and the way their grammars work shapes the way you think, that it channels your thought, that to be Italian is to see the world differently than if you are German or if you speak Arabic, not only because of culture, but because the language makes you see things in a certain way. That is valid to a small extent, that you can detect with little flitters of difference in highly artificial psychological experiments. And so, yes, it seems to be true that Russians do perceive blue a tiny bit differently than the rest of us because they have two words for it and most of us only have one. But the thing is, the effect is very small and there's no evidence that the way your language works basically has you seeing the world through a whole different set of glasses and you're on a different acid trip than the rest of us. Psychologists in particular have done really fascinating experiments, but they don't show that to speak Spanish means that you see the world differently than to speak English. And I think that's at the root of the idea that if you say unhoused, then you'll see homeless people differently. I get it. I completely see where people get that. But the truth is that the Sapir-Whorf hypothesis has been vastly oversold.
Yeah, unhoused versus homeless is a very interesting example. So there's an idea that a person should not be defined by their condition. So if they don't have a home, they are unhoused rather than a homeless person. What are your thoughts on that?
I understand where it's coming from. But after you reach, I'm going to sound like get off of my lawn, but after you reach a certain age, you have living memory of how the new term is just going to sound like the old term after a while. And so I remember in the 70s, you would see someone who's living on the street. My mother would refer to that person, and this was a neutral term, that person was a bum. But frankly, give it about 15 years, an unhoused person is going to have the same resonance as bum and homeless person do now. Rather, one should be working on homelessness. It's a tragic problem. What you call it is of much less importance, and when you try to change the term, you'd better be ready to make something else up in about 20 years.
I guess what's also very interesting right now is that no matter what, when these words change, they are seized upon by different political parties. Because I believe on NPR itself, if you are, they now use unhoused instead of homeless. But I'm guessing someone would say, "See, look, liberal bias right there. It's in the language that they use. They are trying to brainwash us by changing the language we use." Or on the other side, someone might say, they just use the word homeless. What is wrong with NPR? Why aren't they up to date on how we are changing the way that we talk about people who don't have a roof over their heads?
That's one of those things, yeah. The new prescriptivism is mostly from the left, and it's based on an idea that you can change thought and maybe even policy by changing the way people talk about things. But the question that I think needs to be asked more is, given that the civil rights leaders who accomplished so much and created the world that we live in today, imperfect though it is, were so much less concerned with terminology, what is it that we've got on them? Why is it an advance to be concerned so much with terms rather than with getting out and changing the world? And I'm not sure I understand the justification. If Dr. King and Bayard Rustin and Diane Nash and Shirley Chisholm didn't need to think about what you call things, and instead they were doing what they did, were they getting something wrong? Would more have happened if they had been telling us which words to use? And I'm not sure that people have an answer to that question. Maybe the answer would be that the issues are more complex now and that therefore we need to think more about how we say things. But notice that that doesn't go through. There is a certain ease in calling for new terminology, and it's easy to call for it. And it's easier to call for it now than it used to be because we've got our phones. You can get the word out very quickly. You can do a Substack. You can do a podcast. You can do TikTok. You can get the word out that it's now we're going to say it differently. But isn't that a little easier than grassroots activism and trying to accomplish things through the mechanisms of legislation, which is slow, difficult, and frustrating work? But it's easier to say that change doesn't happen than to acknowledge that it happens slowly. I think that these vocabulary changes are an attempt to make it go faster or to feel like you've done something. But the thing is, it doesn't really do anything in the real world that I can identify. And I'm not sure that the civil rights leaders of yore would disagree with me. I'm not sure what we have on them in that sense.
That's John McWhorter. He's a professor of linguistics at Columbia University. He also has a podcast called Lexicon Valley. You can see his TED Talks at TED.com. You can also see the full talk he gave at Claremont McKenna College over at ted.npr.org.